This is the Internet Multicasting Service. Harper Audio presents John Updike reading from his story, The Persistence of Desire, published as part of his book, Pigeon Feathers. Updike realistically describes the frustrations of ordinary middle-class characters.
Unlike, say, the effects of Novocaine, the dilation of pupils is impalpable. The wallpaper he saw through the open door seemed as distinct as ever. He held his fingernails close to his nose and was unable to distinguish the cuticles. He got out of his chair, looked down the hall to where a white splinter of secretary showed, and quickly walked past a closed door to a half-closed one. He peeked in. Janet was sitting in a chair as upright as the one he had left, a two-pronged comb in her mouth, her back arched and her arms up, bundling her hair. As he slipped around the door, she plucked the comb from between her teeth and laughed at him. He saw in a little rimless mirror cocked above her head his own head, grimacing with stealth and grotesquely costumed in glasses like two chocolate coins, and appreciated her laughter, though it didn't fit with what he had prepared to say. He said it anyway. "Janet, are you happy?" She rose with a practical face and walked past him and clicked the door shut. As she stood facing it, listening for a reaction from outside, he gathered her hair in his hand and lifted it from the nape of her neck, which he had expected to find in shadow, but which was instead, to his distended eyes, bright as a candle. He clumsily put his lips to it. "Don't you love your wife?" she asked. "Incredibly much," he murmured into the fine down of her neck. She moved off, leaving him leaning awkwardly, and in front of the mirror smoothed her mussed hair away from her ears. She sat down again, crossing her wrists in her lap. "I just got told my eyelashes are going to fall out," Clyde said. "Your pretty lashes," she said somberly. "Why do you hate me?" "Shh, I don't hate you now." "But you did once." "No, I did not once. Clyde, what is this bother? What are you after?" "Son of a bitch, so I'm a bother. I knew it. You've just forgotten all the time I've been remembering. You're so damn dense. I come in here a bundle of pain to tell you I'm sorry, and I want you to be happy, and all I get is the back of your neck." Affected by what had happened to his eyes, his tongue had loosened, pouring out impressions. With culminating incoherence, he dropped to his knees beside her chair, wondering if the thump would bring Pennypacker. "I must see you again," he blurted. "Shh. I come back here, and the only person who was ever pleasant to me, I discover I maltreated so much she hates me." "Clyde," she said, "you didn't maltreat me. You were a good boy to me." Straightening up on his knees, he fumbled his fingers around the hem of the neck of her dress and tugged it, and looked down into the blurred cavity between her breasts. He had a remembrance of her freckles vanishing like melted snow in the whiteness within her bathing suit. His clumsy glasses hit her cheek. She stabbed the back of his hand with the points of her comb, and he got to his feet, rearing high into a new, less sorrowful atmosphere. "When?" he asked, short of breath. "No," she said. "What's your married name?" "Clyde, I thought you were successful. I thought you had beautiful children. Aren't you happy?" I am, but the rest was so purely inspired, its utterance only grazed his lips. Happiness isn't everything." Footsteps ticked down the hall toward their door, past it. Fear emptied his chest, yet with an excellent imitation of his old high school flippancy, he blew her a kiss, waited, opened the door, and whirled through it. His hand had left the knob when the secretary, emerging from the room where she should have been, confronted him in the linoleum-smelling hall. "Where could I get a drink of water?" he asked plaintively, assuming the hunch and whine of a blind beggar. In truth, he had, without knowing it, become thirsty.
"Once a year I pass through your territory," Pennypacker intoned as he slipped a growing weight of lenses into the tin frame on Clyde's nose. He had returned to Clyde more relaxed and chatty now that all his little rooms were full. Clyde had tried to figure out from the pattern of noise if Janet had been dismissed. He believed she had. The thought made his eyelid twitter. He didn't even know her married name. Down the turnpike, Pennypacker droned on while his face flickered in and out of focus. Up the New Jersey Pike, over the George Washington Bridge, up the Merritt, then up Route 7 all the way to Lake Champlain to hunt the big bass. There's an experience for you to write an article about. I notice you have a new clock in your waiting room. That's a Christmas present from the Alton Optical Company. Can you read that line? H-L-F-Y-T, something that's either an S or an E, K, Pennypacker said without looking. The poor devil, he had all those letters memorized, all that gibberish. Abruptly, Clyde wanted to love him. The oculist altered one lens. Is it better this way or this way? At the end of the examination, Pennypacker said, though the man's equipment was dusty, he gave you a good prescription. In your right eye, the axis of astigmatism has rotated several degrees, which is corrected in the lenses. If you have been experiencing a sense of strain, part of the reason, Clyde, is that these heavy frames are slipping down on your nose and giving you a prismatic effect. For a firm fit, you should have metal frames with adjustable nose pads. They leave such ugly dents on the sides of your nose. You should have them. Your bridge, you see, he tapped his own, is recessed. It takes a regular face to support unarticulated frames. Do you wear your glasses all the time? For the movies and reading, when I got them in the third grade, you told me that was all I needed them for. You should wear them all the time. Really? Even just for walking around? All the time, yes. You have middle-aged eyes. Pennypacker gave him a little plastic squeeze bottle of drops. That is for the fungus on your lids. Fungus? There's a brutal thought. Well, will it cure the tick? Pennypacker impatiently snapped, the tick is caused by muscular fatigue. Thus Clyde was dismissed into a tainted world where things evaded his focus. He went down the hall in his sunglasses and was told by the secretary that he would receive a bill. The waiting room was full now, mostly with downcast old men and myopic children gnawing at their mothers. From out of this crowd, a ripe young woman arose and came against his chest, and Clyde, included in the intimacy of the aroma her hair and skin gave off, felt weak and broad and grand, like a declining rose. Janet tucked a folded note into the pocket of his shirt and said conversationally, "He's waiting outside in the car." The neutral, ominous he opened wide a conspiracy Clyde instantly entered. He stayed behind a minute to give her time to get away. Ringed by the judging eyes of the young and old, he felt like an actor, snug behind the blinding protection of the footlights. He squinted prolongedly at the speedometer clock, which, like a letter delivered on the stage, in fact was blank. Then, smiling ironically toward both sides, he left the waiting room, coming into Pennypacker's entrance hall, a cubicle equipped with a stucco umbrella stand and a red rubber mat saying, in letters so large he could read them, "Walk in." He had not expected to be unable to read her note. He held it at arm's length and slowly brought it towards his face, wiggling it in the light from outdoors. Though he did this several times, it didn't yield even the simplest word. Just wet blue specks. Under the specks, however, in their intensity and disposition, he believed he could make out the handwriting, slanted, open, unoriginal, familiar to him from other notes received long ago. This glimpse, through the skin of the paper, of her plain self quickened and sweetened his desire more than touching her had. He tucked the note back into his shirt pocket, and its stiffness there made a shield for his heart.
In this armor, he stepped into the familiar street. The maples, macadam, shadows, houses, cement were to his violated eyes as brilliant as a scene remembered. He became a child again in this town, where life was a distant adventure, a rumor, an always imminent joy.
This has been Harper Audio. HarperCollins is the copyright owner of this recording and has consented to a limited distribution of Harper Audio as an 8 kHz computer sound file on Internet Town Hall. It is a violation of United States and international copyright laws to copy these recordings in any other way. Harper Audio is a trademark of HarperCollins Publishers, Inc. To order a copy of this tape or to request a catalog of all Harper Audio spoken word cassettes, please call 1-800-C-HARPER or 717-941-1214 or send mail to harper@town.hall.org. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Support for Harper Audio is provided by HarperCollins and by Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Network connectivity for the Internet Multicasting Service is provided by UUNET Technologies and MFS DataNet.